The John T. Smith Company, makers of Smith products since 1894, presents To Stars and Stripes.
We all know something about those great Americans in history whose words were thunder and whose deeds helped remake the world. Men who with their hearts and lives erected our ramparts of democracy and freedom. There have been giants in the American earth, yes, but above all, they were human beings. They were farmers and tradesmen, humble craftsmen, devoted family men, different from us only because destiny chanced to set her hand upon them to shape a great nation and a national ideal. Who were these men? The time, Christmas Day, 1776. The place before Trenton.
The humblest freeman is king above the haughtiest slave.
The man, George Washington, farmer and first president of the United States. Knocking at the door. Mount Vernon, Virginia, April 16th, 1789. Who knocks? Why, America knocks. The United States of America, newly created out of tumult and the clash of arms, looking for her first president. But why does America come to Mount Vernon, the home of George Washington, Virginia planter? Who is this man, Washington? Why this knocking at his gate? The Virginia Hills, 40 years before the knocking at the gate.
All right, Hendrick. What do you find as the distance between our blazed witness tree and that rock?
15 chains, 12 links, Mr. Washington.
Good. Then we're ready to take the magnetic bearing of this line. Probably the last time I'll do it professionally.
So I understand. You're going into the army, aren't you?
Oh, it's only the militia, not His Majesty's regular army. All right. We find the angle to that tree to be north 66 east.
Right, sir. I estimated it with my eye.
You've a good eye, have you?
Oh, tolerably.
All right. What would you say is the distance to that grove of gumwood trees?
I'd say, about 22 chains.
And I say it's 18 chains, 40 lengths. Measure it off, Hendricks. We'll see who has a better eye for the country.
In 1749, a friendly contest on the disposition of the immemorial hills, the river's bend, the angle of a line. Tomorrow, a different kind of contest on the land, and the forfeit, win or lose, the blood of patriots and freemen. But not yet. Not yet. Six years later, a long British column moving slowly through the wilderness against Fort Duquesne, French stronghold, key to the Ohio River.
General Braddock! General Braddock! What's the matter, Washington? You're a sick man. You belong at the rear.
Yes, sir. But we Virginians know how to fight the Frenchman's Indians. If you'll let me lead them on ahead, in line of skirmishes, sir.
Why, man, you can hardly hold your saddle.
But I don't like the looks of things at all. If the Indians should take us on the flank... It's an ambush.
Men, hold your ground. Stand where you are.
Hold your ground and keep out of the woods.
Keep out of those woods, you hear? Keep out. You'll be cut to pieces. Keep out, I say.
Hold your fire until you see something to shoot at.
Then, trumpeter! Trumpeter! Trumpeter!
Red men, red coats, red ruins. The ambush is alive with flame, alive with death. The officers are picked off. Braddock himself falls mortally wounded, and rallying the men, saving the remnants of the scattered British column, Braddock's young aide-de-camp comes into his own.
Have you heard the news?
News? What news?
Braddock's beaten.
Braddock's dead.
He's beaten and the French are lost to the Ohio.
Well, what about the army?
We're cut to pieces, but plenty left alive, thanks to George Washington.
Thanks to who?
Washington. George Washington.
Never heard of him. What'd you say his name was again?
George Washington.
Queer. I never heard of the man.
Never mind. You will. Mark me. You will.
But no. Washington, suddenly a great name in the colonies, is ignored by official British circles. And at 26, weary of war and broken in health, Washington pauses at a friend's house while on official business.
Come in, Colonel. You're remaining for dinner, you know. My house guests are expecting you.
My regrets to your house guests, but my business with the governor is urgent.
Oh, you don't suppose he can do something for getting you a royal commission, do you?
I shouldn't ask him, even if he could.
Eh?
I'm leaving the army, Chamberlain.
You are what?
I'm tired of fighting, and I'm ill, really ill. Besides, my brother's death makes Mount Vernon my whole responsibility. I could have wished to come by all that land in some happier fashion, but now that it's mine, I'm going to become a farmer. I love the soil. I've always wanted to be near it. This is my chance. Well, let's see if Bishop has my horse saddled.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I've interrupted.
Why, nonsense. This is most opportune. Colonel, one of my most charming guests, Mrs. Martha Custis, Colonel George Washington.
And the governor's urgent business stood attendant upon the Virginian's instant interest in pretty little Martha Custis, a widow with two small children, and charming, very, very charming indeed. And outside, Bishop holds the colonel's horse, and will, too, until the moon is high and low again. A few weeks later, two spies lurk darkly near an open door and whisper hoarsely.
Jesse, don't worry, I'm watching. Jesse. Do you think Mama likes Mr. Washington? Isn't Mr. Washington? It's Colonel Washington. Do you?
Do I what?
Think Mama likes him?
I don't know.
You?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Shh. I am shushing. I wish I could hear what you say to her. That's what I wish.
Old thing, Martha. You know the hardship and fighting. I've come back to Mount Vernon to be a father.
I know. It's a lovely place, Tom. A beautiful house.
But only a house, Martha. Only a house. It's no more a home than when it was a heap of unpainted boards piled around a hole in the ground. I've endured war and loneliness to come back to an empty house.
You have your friends, your servants.
Friends and servants don't make a home any more than fire alone makes a hearth. A man, to go on fighting, needs a cause. There's some treasure worth defending. You could be that to me, Martha.
There are my children. Little Patsy and Jackie.
That's a great house. And nothing fills an empty room like children. I'm marching on the Ohio again soon. My last campaign. If I might go, knowing that when I return...
Then go, John. Go. And return to us.
Package came in the morning post, Mrs. Boston.
Oh, thank you. Just set it on that table.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That'll be those toys I ordered from London. That's all, Billy.
Yes.
I wonder if they sent the tin soldiers. I ordered 10 shillings worth.
They're here.
And 6 books for little children?
They are here, too.
1 fashionably dressed doll, 1 guinea.
1 guinea for a doll?
I think I meant 10 shillings.
You meant a guinea, and it is a guinea. And it's outrageous. How you spoil those children.
I spoil them. I do. Why, you're the one who spoils them.
1 guinea for a doll.
The best things are usually the best economy.
But you don't have to buy both of them presents whenever one of them has a birthday.
Oh, yes, I do, Martha. Yes, I do.
I should like to know why.
Act of Parliament. It promotes the peace and quiet of the realm.
Nonsense.
Then let's say that it promotes the peace and quiet of my own soul. And someday, when we've children of our own, you'll do as much for them. And now, where were we?
Oh, yes, the toys, the toys.
wistful yearning. They would never be the children of their own. Worse, the day would come when Martha Washington would see the giant of a man who was her husband sink across the lifeless body of her daughter whom he had come to love so well and sob. Sob as though the great, enduring heart would break within him.
Patsy. My poor, poor Patsy. My little girl. You hardly live. You hardly live at all.
And over there, Chamberlain, you see that patch of cotton? My daughter Patsy planted that a long time ago.
It thrives beautifully, doesn't it?
I tend it myself. I promised that I would. Well, what do you think of my tight little acreages now?
It's astonishing, Washington. A most practical lesson in self-sufficiency.
We grow all we need and go to market with a surplus. You see that tobacco there? The best in the colony.
And I believe it.
It exhausts the land, though. I must calculate on rotating my crop somehow. Farmers must all come to that soon if the national soil is not to be impoverished. Well, what do you say to riding back for refreshment? I hope you won't mind drinking coffee. Tea is in disgrace here.
I'll drink coffee gladly rather than pay the crown a tax upon tea. The injustice they heap upon the colony. The Stamp Act. Taxation without representation. Now this duty on tea. I tell you, Washington...
Tell me nothing in anger, my friend. There must be no quarrel with the mother country. We're still loyal British subjects.
We're Americans, Washington.
Americans. It falls pleasantly upon the ear, Chamberlain. Americans. Americans.
Growing portents and conflict. The Stamp Act. Troops quartered on the Boston citizenry. The Boston Massacre. The Boston Tea Party. Folly upon folly visited upon the colonies by the mother country. With the Americans growing sullen and dangerous and storing munitions to counter. The breaking point. The night of April 18th, 1775.
The British are landing to march on Concord. To arms.
Hey.
The Redcoats are coming.
The deuce you're telling me.
Ride hard, Paul Revere. Tell them all, farmer, tradesman, clerk, craftsman, the British are coming. Nay, the British are here. The day of reckoning is here. Awake, colonials! Awake, Mad Anthony Wayne! Awake, Ethan Allen! Ticonderoga beckons to your riflemen! Awake, Artemus Ward and Light Horse Harry Lee! Awake! Reckoning is at hand! Awake, General Gage! Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne has a sword he'll one day yield to you! Awake, Nathan Hale, to the hangman's noose and immortality! Awake, Franklin and Green! Putnam Prescott and Daniel Morgan! And awake, Francis, the swamp fox Marion. Awake and to horse. The red coats are coming. Awake, Patrick Henry. Rise, brave Benedict Arnold. Awake to heroism, to chagrin and treason. Awake, George Washington, Virginia planter. Leave your careful figures and accounting. Goodbye, George Washington, to all the tenderness of peace and home and family. Goodbye to all that. Another sort of reckoning is at hand.
A brother's sword has been sheathed in a brother's breast. and the once happy and peaceful plains of America are either to be drenched in blood or inhabited by slaves. Unhappy alternative. But can a virtuous man hesitate in his choice?
Speak, John Hancock, for America. Ordain who shall be leader.
The delegates of these United Colonies do therefore repose a special trust and confidence in your patriotism and fidelity, and do appoint you, George Washington, to be General and Commander-in-Chief of the Armies of the United Colonies in defense of American liberty and for repelling every hostile invasion thereof.
This is what I meant, Martha, when I said that men must have some treasure to defend, and hence I fight again. I have my home, and you, and Jackie, whom we both love so much. When all is said, those are things that men fight and die for. While this is so, let no one say nobility has fled from man. Goodbye, Martha, my wife. We shall be together again.
And now, as once before, a contest waged upon the land, the river's bend, the angle of a line. A different kind of contest than before, for win or lose, the blood of patriots and freemen. And now Washington, facing defeat at every hand, hindered by the bickerings of the Continental Congress, thwarted, maligned, conspired against, betrayed. The young nation struggling to rear its head among the nations and being struck to earth again. And the Virginian's heart would break, but that it was an enduring heart.
Defeat. Defeat.
Christmas Day, 1776, after White Plains in Long Island. Washington gigantically alone and lonely. Pacing the floor of his hut. Pacing, 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 pacing.
Defeat. A handsome gift to lay before the Congress. A Christmas gift forsooth from Washington to blunderers. A memento. A souvenir. A token of the Continental Army's gratitude for doubtful bread, for meager meat. Indeed, no meat at all. The rusty rifles destitute of power. Her clothing meanly cut of shoddy cloth, no more than just enough that Britain may not call our armies naked. Her shoes, oh, well, forget the shoes. The Continental Congress does as much. And yet, this cause, this thing called liberty cannot perish. Humblest freeman is still king above the haughtiest slave. If we do not acquit ourselves as men, then slavery be our portion and our desert. Are we to let the light go out and plunge the world again in darkness? No. No. Bitter words put no sherry on this particular pudding. Pudding, indeed. No doubt the enemy dines in state today, the while my hungry soldiers starve. If I could send the redcoats relish for their meal, with my compliments, something not too light, and suitable for soldiers' fare, distilled from musket barrels. If I could send them my profound respects across the Delaware to Trenton. The Delaware. Of course. Of course. The Delaware.
Victory! Victory at Trenton!
Victory at Trenton!
It is my happy office to report to the Congress that the victories at Trenton and Princeton have saved the Revolution for the bare moment.
Victory and then defeat again. Defeat at Brandywine, defeat at Germantown, defeat and retreat to the shadows of the hills. Valley Forge, 1778. A shrill, bitter wind howls savagely in the valley, slamming a shutter dismally at Washington's headquarters. Inside, Washington glances moodily out of a window, does not hear the door behind him open softly and close again.
George.
Eh? Martha!
George.
Martha, I could scarcely wait until you came.
No more could I, George. No more could I. Let me look at you.
Tell me, how have you been? Are you well?
Yes, Martha. Quite well.
Last time you wrote, you had a cold. Is it better? Let me hear you speak again.
I think you would better do the talking for a while.
Just as I thought. Voice is still sick.
No, Martha. Just temporary. Here. Let me take your cloak. So. Oh, but I'm glad you're here. In this bleak valley of all places. But then, the loveliest jewels are found in desert places.
You still can make a pretty speech, George.
When properly inspired. Tell me, how does it go with you and Jack,
Very well, George. Very well indeed.
And at Mount Vernon? Did Sam fix the shutters so the wind won't tear them off?
He did. And came down with the measles. There's no connection, though. And 2 weeks ago, we sent 4 ewes and lambs to the mill for fattening. And...
Yes? What else?
George, you look so tired. Does the war go hard with us?
It does. But not half so badly as I thought before you came in. It must go better than I thought if this ragged army of mine can hold 19,000 of the enemy in Philadelphia. And suppose we get the help from France that Lafayette insists we will. Suppose, Martha. If I didn't know it before, I know it now. This game is in our hands. To play it well is all we have to do.
You make a stirring speech, too, George, when need be.
When properly inspired, Martha. And now, tell me, what more about Mount Vernon?
All went along, a plump and warm enemy is strangely cowed in Philadelphia. Then spring, and stunning news from plain as cotton Ben Franklin, the French alliance, a French fleet, French troops joining the inspired Americans as they pound at the enemy's fortifications at Yorktown.
General Washington, the artillery has breached the first redoubt.
Then take it. By all means, give the order to charge and take it. Let us get on with this war and end it.
The work is done, and well done. George Washington, first in war, first in peace, first in the heart of his countrymen, lays aside the sword and looks to his plowshare. Mount Vernon gleams in white again. The crops spring up to the farmer's magic touch. Washington is himself again, entertaining, holding forth among his friends, managing the household zestfully, until on April 16th, 1789.
I've been making the rounds this morning, Martha. I'm more than pleased with the way things are going. The land is strong and alive. It'll be a year for crops and grazing. And nothing would please me better than to be known as America's first farmer.
Is that all, George? After everything?
It's all I wish. That other desperate work is finished, and I have my reward to be called American and Freeman. The lights that once were flickering are bright again. America's children and her children's children multiplied into the future can be free. But let them be vigilant. Let them look carefully to the lamps and trim the wicks. Black winds will blow across the world in this liberty. This flame will dance a perilous jig. Let those who are its guardians be its guardians, lest it sputter and go out. For myself now, I seek only peace and rest. Rest. Sit here beside me, Martha.
Rest, George Washington. Rest. Your work has just begun. A nation of free men, the like of which the world has never seen, is calling you this April 16th, 1789, to be its president. the first president of the United States of America. Time, 1737. The place, Boston.
A penny saved is a penny earned.
The man, Benjamin Franklin, printer and America's first and greatest ambassador.
Tonight's portrait of George Washington was written by Milton Geiger. This is Cleve Conway, ladies and gentlemen, speaking for the John T. Smith Company and for Smith Products. And inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week for our tribute to Benjamin Franklin and to Stars and Stripes. Good night.